All right, I think we can get started. Welcome, everybody. I'm Jenna Vasconcellos from the IWCF Education Committee, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today for our education program, Managing the Impact of Growth on Infrastructure in Boise, with Mayor Lauren McClain. We do have several guests in attendance today, so I'd like to provide a brief introduction to IWCF and a welcome to them. Idaho Women's Charitable Foundation the mission is to foster educated philanthropy through collaboration, pooled resources, and individual giving to positively impact the community. Through our pooled investments and individual designations, we direct our giving to make the greatest impact in the areas important to us collectively and individually. Since inception, we have funded more than 700 grantees and a total of more than $5 million. Involvement is flexible. Depending on where we are in life, we have a little or a lot of availability. There are many ways to get involved: volunteering for tasks, serving on a committee, or even being on the board. If you'd like to get more involved, please let us know. Also, if you are more than happy to simply contribute and vote, that is fine too. At IWCF, we acknowledge everyone's own lived experience based on their unique identity and demographics. We constantly strive to remain mindful and inclusive of everyone's stories as we work toward creating a more equitable community. Please talk with the member who invited you if you have questions about IWCF. Thanks again for coming today. I have just a couple of announcements first of upcoming IWCF events. January 31st is the member renewal deadline. Please refer to this week's email or the IWCF website for the membership renewal form and grant designations. Our grants committee is in the process of evaluating our submissions, and site visits will be conducted in the next few weeks. Once the final two from each interest area are determined, a ballot will be emailed to all paid members this spring. And now I get to introduce the speaker, Mayor Lauren McClain, and give a short biography, which is submitted by her office. Lauren is committed to creating a city for everyone and has worked tirelessly toward that goal, advocating for open space conservation, tackling housing and homelessness side by side with the community, and leading nationally acclaimed climate action efforts. Mayor McClain was sworn in on January 7th, 2020. She's the 56th mayor of Boise and the first woman elected to that position in the city's 150-year history. McClain's service to the people of Boise began as a volunteer in 2001. She led the historic Boise Foothills Open Space Levy campaign, and along with hundreds of other dedicated people, secured protection of thousands of acres in the foothills for future generations. Lauren served on the Boise City Council from 2011 to 2019 and served as council president from 2017 to 2019. During her time on City Council, she led the effort to pass Boise's 100% clean energy plan. Lauren earned a Master of Public Administration from Boise State University as the first Carl Burke Fellow. Lauren married her high school sweetheart, Scott. Lauren and Scott are parents to Madeline and Aiden. She's an avid trail runner, outdoors woman, and reader. She and her family love to explore Idaho's beautiful backcountry by foot or by ski. Right. Now, people can ask questions through the chat or the Q&A on your Zoom screen. And there are some already submitted, which we will give to Lauren at the end of her talk. So Lauren, Mayor McClain, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Jenna, very much for the invitation. And thanks everybody for joining today. It's great to be here, be with you. Although I gotta say, it'll be so nice to be able to see faces rather than just the little bitty hole of the camera on one of these days soon. I hope everybody's doing well and really appreciate this opportunity to talk a little bit about what we're doing here at the City of Boise, but then really look forward to the question and answer and comment period afterwards so that we can have a conversation. And first off, I want to thank the Idaho Women's Charitable Foundation for all that you do. Over the years, I've joined and listened to a couple different events, considered giving, hope to be able to at some point later in my life, because it's an incredible organization that you've all built in the last, it's probably been, at least I've been familiar with it now for 20 some years, it feels. Incredible organization with great people and really important impact. And I know that IWCF has been a partner to the city even in some of the priorities that we have, and really appreciate the leadership that you've shown in so many areas of our community as individuals, and then as an organization, and funding and supporting groups that are doing really important work here. So thank you very much. You know, the topic of the conversation today, growth and managing infrastructure, and importantly, in my mind, it's doing everything we can to protect what we love about this place, and that's her people and the community that together we build through this moment of profound growth. And I was reflecting on that, and I want to talk today about efforts that both efforts that we've taken, progress that we've made, goals that we have for what's next in the realms of housing, transportation, economic development, and climate. But at the same time, I want to frame it. I was thinking about the topic, and it made me think about the State of the City address that I gave in September. In that, I spent a lot of time reading different accounts of Boise's history, and a takeaway that I had, and something that I talked a lot about in that speech, was something that a historian remarked as being really a defining through line for this city and her people. And that is that we are a group of people committed to this community that we're all helping to build and have been helping to build for 150 some years. But what he remarked on was that even in times of profound difficulty, what made us unique or similar to those that came before us was that as Boiseans, we were always willing to come together in common purpose for our city. And throughout our city's history, we've seen these waves of growth, whether it be the very beginning, when of course there weren't very many of us here. And so the city was doubling quickly, growing rapidly. But then again, after the war, so periods in the 50s, again in the 70s, in the 90s, when my husband and I, fresh out of college, were so lucky to find Boise, and then again now, and we've seen these periods of profound growth that really put pressures on our community and also ask more of us as members of this community to do what we can to welcome those who are calling Boise home, to ensure that we're preparing for the future, coming together in common cause to protect the community and the essence of this place that we love. And through these changes, because we continue to do that as a community, what I saw and what this historian was saying was that we get through these tough times and we're able to protect the city as she grows, welcome people, bring them into our community and create opportunities for folks to be more engaged, just like I was in my early 20s. We get through that moment, everything's settled, and 10, 15 years later, it happens again. And so that was really interesting for me to think, to find all these different accounts of and look at what was happening in, say, the 50s when we needed water infrastructure. And Boiseans, you know, were worried about growth, but knew we needed clean water and stepped up to the table and voted for the first bond that funded Lander Street. And here we just did that again as a community in November on the ballot. In the 70s, when there was concern about growth, community came together and really enacted the vision of the Greenbelt and set aside and protected our river, looked at how we better plan for parks, but through community action created something that's had lasting legacy. In the 90s, when I came, there was so much conversation about growth and where it would go, how it would look. And then shortly after, while the city was growing, while we were kind of moving forward using urban renewal downtown in its early days, a group of volunteers came together and said, we protected our river by creating a green belt. Let's set aside open space as the mayor at the time proposed and the committee propose to protect our community as she grows. And we're seeing it over and over again through time. So for me, that was helpful to know that, yes, these are unprecedented times, especially when you combine the impact of COVID and the pandemic layered on top of the growth that we're experiencing now. The calls that we have to action, ensuring that we grow an economy that can provide our kids and grandkids what they need to make a home here, if they choose to make a home here, which we all hope they do. So these pressures are on top of another cyclical period of growth. And so as we've kind of taken an approach to what the community wants, needs, expects, at this time, we're both balancing, and in my early days as mayor, the immediate needs related to a pandemic, while making sure that we stay focused on the very topics that brought us here. And those are the topics that I want to talk about, because the pressures that Boiseans were feeling, it seemed, became so much more apparent to so many more of us as our city has experienced the pandemic, the growth that was occurring before, but really has, you know, shown to be so much more during, and I imagine it'll remain after, with the needs that we all have as a city. So on housing, I want to talk first about housing. And, you know, I think about this, this is personal for me as it is for everybody, because you need a home, a place to call your own, so that then you can focus on the other parts of life that make it possible to seek opportunity and build that foundation and stability for you, yourself, your family. You know, and Scott and I came here in 1998, and we fell in love with the city. We had thought that we were moving elsewhere. I was planning on going to law school, and he had another job. But as he and we visited Boise, I knew that this was the place that I wanted to call home, and I hoped that he would feel the same, and he did. We came on one new job, his, and I set out to look for what I might do here, because my plans were completely changed. But I give you that because within 9 months, we were able to save the money that we needed to put a down payment on a house. And being able to do that in 1999, when we weren't quite 25, right before we had our first child, created a foundation for us that made it possible to build a life here. And I hear from so many Boiseans whose kids are now the age that Scott and I were, and when we bought our first house, and they're finding their kids want to come back from school, but they can't find a place to live that they can afford with the job opportunities they have here. And then there are so many other stories of folks that are struggling to make rent on the jobs that they have, struggling to pay those utility bills because their jobs were shut down for a little while. And young people that are committed to this place that want to come home, as parents have mentioned, and find a home. So ensuring that we have a home for everyone is the bedrock of so much of the work that we're doing. And we've made progress. We felt in many ways that we had a lot of catch up to do, especially around housing that's affordable to Boise budgets. So working folks, think the teachers at your neighborhood school, the nurses, firefighters, and police that take care of you on a daily basis, need to have room and a place to live in our community. So we set out to do a couple different things. We launched or furthered a land trust concept. It was a priority of mine as a council person that the city use the land that we own more effectively. And if housing is appropriate, we use it for housing. And so we've seen through, and now we've broken ground at Franklin and Orchard, where there will be several hundred homes at Boise, working Boisean budgets, affordable budgets. We are in the process of beginning the process to do the same thing at a piece of land the city owns that used to be the Smokey Davis on State Street. And we're looking at and have looked at and have prioritized other land the city has. Think the parking lot next to Fire Station 5, a great place for permanent supportive housing. And so that land trust, we have broken ground. We're negotiating for the next housing development that will break ground, and we're setting more goals. We've looked at incentive programs and we're assessing. I've worked with my staff to think about build, measure, learn. Let's try something, see if it's getting the results we need. If it's not, figure out what we need to do, how we need to do it differently to get those results that we're after. We have currently in process, I gotta look at a number because I said it last night at a thing and then I was worried I would forget the number today. We currently have 370 homes in process through our land trust. We have 14 affordable developments taking place in the city, public, private, partnerships. And then we have just under 1,200 homes currently in the process of being built. And I bring that up because we need to make sure that the city is doing everything we can to incentivize and partner with builders of homes to create affordable homes. We also have to make sure that we have enough homes available for every budget here in the city of Boise so that folks that are working here can live here. So that number, as we look at how many homes are in process, is really important to us and we monitor that often. So what's next in terms of goals around housing? We have a goal of 250 permanent supportive housing units. Those are units that support those who are chronically homeless, that provide wraparound services to do everything we can to support them in their pursuit of staying housed. A goal of 250 units that we'll have. And that's where in the past, Idaho Women and Charitable Foundation has helped the city as a partner in our work around those homelessness services and support for those experiencing homelessness. We have a goal of 1,250 affordable homes at various working budgets, Boise working budgets. And we are going to use the land that we have at our disposal to do that. We're going to seek partnerships. The council has made a commitment of $10 million towards permanent supportive housing and housing in general. We're leveraging those resources as well as our land to move the needle on housing because it's so incredibly important to everyone. Now, housing's the foundation, as I mentioned, is both because we need a place to live, but we want to make sure that those who are currently housed stay in their homes. So we also have a goal of preserving 1,000, these are in the next 5 years, preserving 1,000 units that are existing affordable housing and making sure that as the city changes and neighborhoods change, if we're losing some of that currently existing affordable housing, then we're negotiating in such a way that we don't have this, that we don't have a net loss wherever possible of affordable units. But so we have a goal of preserving 1,000 units. I mentioned the goals for the number of new homes we know we need to build in the next 5 years. We got to keep people housed. And so we have built partnerships and strengthened those partnerships with Jesse Tree, for instance, that will make sure that those who are experiencing difficulties in staying homes, they've had notice they might be evicted, that they have the representation they need, the caseworker and support that they need to stay home. And so working with Jesse Tree, we're helping make that possible. And we also, on keeping people housed, and through the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, received about $12 million, this was 11 something, last year in January. And we set about creating a program to get that funding into the hands of Boiseans as quickly as possible with the Boise City Ada County Housing Authority. This has been an incredible partnership. We streamlined the process to make it as easy as possible for folks that were experiencing deep, deep difficulty because this funding that came from the federal government made it possible to cover back the utility bills that we're currently needing help with, back rent and current rent. We did that in record time. And you might've seen a couple months ago, but the state also received quite a bit of money, but had only spent about 1 or 2% by the fall of their funds. They had some of that money that they had to send back to the federal government because it wasn't spent. And we worked to bring those resources, as much of that as we could, back to Boise. So I had to go back to DC, but then we got it back here because we proved that we could do this, that we were committed to doing this. And together with the Boise City Ada County Housing Authority, we will be receiving funds that have been taken back from the state to the city of Boise and the Housing Authority to be able to distribute to residents. And I'm really proud of the partnership, the incredible process that the Housing Authority created with our housing team here, but really most importantly, excited that we were able to convince the federal government to send some of that money back rather than taking it back for good so that we can get it out into Boiseans' hands so they can stay home. So housing is basic, but you need a job that pays you what makes it possible to build the life here in the home that you found. And both for us today, and we're all thinking about how we do this in the future for our kids and grandkids. So on the economy, you know, Brookings said one more thing on housing. Brookings wrote a report and predicted that we would struggle. This was back in 2019. We would struggle because housing at that point even was out of whack with wages. And they pointed out how housing itself impacts the economy. And it really is that backbone in many ways of the economy. So while we're focusing on housing and doing all that we can as a city to move the needle and get homes that are affordable on the ground, we're also looking holistically at how we build an economy for today that will be vibrant and lasting into the future. So we know that we need more manufacturing and industrial opportunities here in the city. You might have seen recently that some of the land around the airport that is, you know, under the flight paths, et cetera, always has been on a plan for industrial at some point. We decided to advance that, but now was the time so that we can create opportunities for jobs for our residents. Some accomplishments. Amazon is building a facility at the airport. You probably saw in the news that we agreed to build what is called the apron. I like to call it the driveway for the airplane, so I understand fully what it is that we're investing in to get to this facility. And we are actively seeking a second company to use the apron, because as soon as we land a second company right there, we'll be able to have the costs of that apron that the airport is investing granted back to us. We're working on that. Azek is a company that I'm so excited to welcome here to Boise. In fact, they should be done with the construction of their facility very, very soon. And that will be just about 200 new jobs here in the city. They're a company that takes waste product and turns it into fake wood product to build things. And when their CEO and leadership team came to Boise, I think it was when I saw them, it was probably in the fall, they made clear that the reasons that they chose Boise over the cities that they were looking at was because of the alignment that we have around economic development and climate, in particular, climate innovation, clean energy transition, and how that connects the economy. For them, it's their business. And because we have goals as a city, we're going to help them meet the goals that they've established for their own business. So very excited to welcome them. We also, as we think about what's next, we convened a months-long process, quite frankly, and had conversations with hundreds of stakeholders to build an economic development strategic plan for the city. And we did this because we realized that we were helping Boise Valley Economic Partnership wherever we could. We'd work with and respond to requests for information from other employers. But what we didn't have as a city, the largest city in the state, was a plan that really helped us determine how we could best use our resources, which are often people, to support economic development and job creation in the community. So that plan made clear what we need to focus on, and it's quality of life issues, making sure that there are that we continue to protect the healthy environment that we have here. Got to look at housing. Schools are important. All of these things that make up a high quality of life. We are looking at how we provide strategic support from a staffing perspective to help those industries and companies that are already here grow, especially when there's an alignment with the strengths that we have as a community. Workforce development and training is a very big piece, and regional leadership also floated to the top as being important. And I bring these topics up because they're kind of the highlights of the plan. And now our staff is looking at how we can take the highlights, the recommendations made, and best serve the community, the businesses that exist here, the people that are looking for those jobs as we grow organizations and companies, using the people, the skills, and the tools that we have as a city. Now, a couple things in that. The regional leadership is important because so goes the region, so goes Boise. And you might be surprised to know, on a relationship perspective, we are working incredibly closely with cities up and down this region. And now I actually would start the region as I think about the mayors and the Air Force Base at Mountain Home, all the way to Caldwell and beyond, both through the Treasure Valley Partnership on individual initiatives, and housing is one of those things, and transportation another, individual initiatives. Then the Highway District, which is incredibly important, I want to highlight. We have a strong working relationship with the leadership of that commission, the leadership of the organization, and our staff is working so well. As we determine the infrastructure that needs to be invested in, the opportunities right now with the really the generational opportunities in the Infrastructure and Jobs Act to apply for grants, to be able to invest in more infrastructure sooner than we would be otherwise. So we're working really closely. And those relationships are important as we're talking with companies that want to grow here because they're already here, or that are thinking about coming, and we're working on economic development together as well. And another piece of economic development and making sure that folks have access to jobs that make it possible to build a life here is childcare. For too long, childcare was overlooked. And in one of my early transition committee that looked at economic development brought childcare onto the list of things the city really ought to be paying attention to because of the kind of the trickle-down impacts it has on families. Then the Economic Recovery Task Force that we designated with CEOs of companies, universities, and think tanks came together and listed childcare as something that the city needed to take action on. So we formed a task force based on their recommendation, and that task force brought us a list of things they believe the city ought to do as quickly as possible. So just this winter or fall, I think it was November, we updated our licensing requirements so that now someone can be licensed provisionally and get to work the next day at a childcare facility that needs them so they can take care of the kids that the parents need a place to go for. We've done that, and we're using some of our funds to waive the licensing fees to drop the barrier of entry, that cost that a childcare employee has to pay to get going. And we did this because affordable, accessible childcare is incredibly important to our residents. And we've got the employers, the childcare employers, that are struggling to find folks to fill those jobs, just as every employer in this region is right now. And they said, look, if we can start the people sooner rather than having an 8-week period, that'd be super helpful. And the childcare providers themselves said, you know, it's these costs that make it hard to then wait. We might as well go find another job rather than waiting for a license and paying all these licensing fees. So we wanted to correct that. And we are still working with Idaho Association for the Education of Young Children and other providers, and taking input from parents to make sure that we're doing everything we can as a city to where we can to help alleviate some of the issues to ensure that we've got childcare that's needed for so many people. So you've got a home, you've got a job, you got to get to the job. And that's transportation, of course. You know, we are experiencing more traffic and congestion because we're growing. And as we look at what we can do as a city to impact that and improve that, it starts with the relationships with the Highway District so that we can have a really good back and forth collaborative relationship when it comes to those decisions that are being made on where, when, and how roads are being built, but importantly, how pedestrian infrastructure is being built. Because they too, the agency is also charged with the bike infrastructure in this region. And that's incredibly important because when we create a solid bike infrastructure, it gets some folks that are able to off the roads onto bikes, and it makes it easier for those that have to be in their cars to be on the roads. So when we think about transportation, we're thinking about, of course, the road infrastructure and the partnership that we have with ACHD. It's building out a bus system and a transit system for the 21st century as we continue to grow. And together with Valley Regional Transit, and thank you to Congressman Simpson, there were some earmarks made to invest in some of the routes in Boise. And then we're currently working with Valley Regional Transit, the Highway District, and others to look at opportunities for grant funds in this newest infrastructure bill that would make it possible for us to make more progress along State Street, say, than we would otherwise. It's a plan that's existed for 20 years. We see an opportunity now to make some movement there to help residents move more frequently on buses and get to the jobs that exist. And then finally, I want to talk about pathways along canals, because as our city grows and we look at how we move folks from home to work and everything in between, and we look at the legacy we've had of a greenbelt along the river, protecting open space in the foothills, we have a gem of a network in our canals, ditches, laterals, and drains throughout the city. And so we've made it a priority to determine which ones we could access and secure easements on to move people along water. And that's really, as I think about it, it's connecting our farmland to our foothills and everything in between. But importantly, it becomes in many ways ribbons of linear parks for folks that can get outside, be able to walk, just get to some open space in neighborhoods throughout the city, but then also a way to be able to move folks on bikes to jobs if they want to move that way. And it was just this year, one of the funnest things I did towards the end of the summer was spend a day ditch riding with a canal company and having a conversation about the easements that we wanted to discuss, the issues that they have as managers of canals, but then their willingness to negotiate with us. And I'm really excited we're going to be able to make some progress on that this year. And then the final topic I want to cover is climate. Because in each of these topics, whether it be housing, the economy, transportation, when we think about how we ensure that we protect this community that we love so deeply as we grow, that we protect it for our kids, that we're thinking about the impact that a changing climate will have, not only on our health, but on the job opportunities in the region and in the country in the long run. And also on the costs that climate could have on housing and transportation, everything else. So back in the day, I was a utilities analyst and a junior portfolio manager at a company. And one of my jobs was to look at whether or not climate risk was being priced into the value of the companies that we hold. And to ask that companies do that, so protected in the long run shareholders. Well, as a community, our residents are our shareholders, and it's our job as elected officials, as community leaders, to make sure that we're asking those questions. Are we mitigating for climate in the long run? We know we're gonna have smokier days, hotter days, and we've got to make sure that we protect public health. But we also know, as climate changes, that we need to be thinking about electricity and where our energy comes from, because we want to protect the bottom lines of our residents as they're paying for electricity. We need to be thoughtful about water and ensuring that wherever we can, we're conserving water, but setting up systems to provide water in the future for people and for jobs. And so that's why at the City of Boise, we have really bold goals. We, by 2035, we intend as a city government to be carbon neutral. And we're gonna do it that way so that we can lead by example, but importantly learn as we're leading. Because by 2050, our goal is to have done that citywide. We have clean electricity goals. The goal is to be, as a municipal government, be powered by 100% clean electricity by 2030. And together with incredible partnerships that we've built in the last couple of years with Idaho Power, we're going to be able to beat those goals by as early as 7 years, which is incredibly exciting. Because that means at the same time that as we as a city are powering our municipal government with clean electricity, because Idaho Power shares our goals, We're also needing innovators to help us meet our goals that will help create jobs of the future. And to meet some of those goals, one of the things we have to do is electrify our fleet. And just this year, we brought through Valley Regional Transit some electric buses on, but importantly also electric garbage trucks. And at one, as they came on, we were actually the city with the largest electric garbage truck fleet in the country. And I ran into Republic taking some photos one day when I was running. And the driver, the guy that was driving it that day for the pictures, was actually the manager. And he asked me if I wanted to go for a ride. So I jumped in. It was really incredible. It went super fast, which was surprising and a little overwhelming because it was so big, but it was super quiet. And I asked him what his team of drivers thought about being an electric truck versus a big diesel one. And I was super intrigued because he told me they love it because it's quieter, it's cleaner. It's just altogether felt even healthier as they were using them. But then he said something that I thought was so incredibly important. And he said he so appreciated that the company that he worked for, that he'd been working for 30 years as a U.S. Armed Services veteran, was told, you know, when he came out, you'd be great. You should join the garbage truck company. You're strong. Good job. A job for life. And he took it. But he said he was so grateful that Republic, the company that he's been with, was willing to think about the future and to make investments in the future. Because as the world changed, the only way that he and folks like him would continue to have those jobs was if companies just changed with the world. And I thought that was such a great example of how, as we look at embracing the opportunities that climate change brings to invest in our community and set us up for an economy of the future, it is about jobs, which means it's really about people. And so to close, I just want to talk a little bit about that. People, as we seek to build a city for everyone, we work on housing, climate, transportation, the economy. We're doing it because we want to protect this place that we love. And most fundamentally, because we care about each other. We're doing it for each other. We're doing it for our kids and grandkids. So all these decisions that we're making are always about people and the place that we live. And in the last 2 years, we have been incredibly tested with pandemic, with calls for conversations around justice and community, with the rise in extremism that we've seen here in our city and around the country. Yet through all of that, Boiseans have shown time and time again that we do what Arthur Hart, the historian, saw 20 years ago that we did. And that is that we come together, we take care of each other, we unite in the toughest of times around a shared vision that we have for this special, special city that we love. And whether it be the pandemic, when Boiseans said, yes, we'll take care of each other, we'll wear masks, we'll do what's necessary to protect our neighbors, to protect the most vulnerable, to protect our businesses, it protected our community. When we've seen the graffiti and anti-Semitic writings on the Greenbelt, Boiseans have stood up and said, no, that's not everywhere, we are everywhere. They've stood with their neighbors, they've stood up, they've spoken out and said, there's no place for that here, but what there is place for here is people committed to each other, building community together, protecting each other, welcoming everyone as we create this city that really truly does welcome everybody into this community. So I thank each and every one of you for all that you've done. I wanna say, it has been an incredible honor to be in this role for the last 2 years, to see firsthand the power of people protecting the community they care about, the people that they love. The vision that we share in forging ahead through this time of growth to ensure that we remain a city for everyone and that has that essence of this community that we love. And of course, to be able to do this work as I'm watching people in their own lives contribute, to be able to do this work day by day with so many of you to protect Boise, to prepare us for the future, to ensure that our kids and grandkids are able to enjoy a place that we have been so blessed to enjoy. So thanks so much, and I'm happy to take any questions, comments, look forward to the conversation.
Thank you so much, Lauren. You're very encouraging, and I think we all really enjoyed hearing how busy you must be and your staff. It's very encouraging. There are a lot of questions that came out that we've handed over to your staff member, Justin. Okay. He's going to go ahead and ask some of those that you haven't already covered. So I will get out of here and let him go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Jenna. Well, I think I can hear Justin talking through the wall, but I can't hear him.
Well, I could start with one.
Do that. I just heard a door, so I think he might be
okay.
He might be coming this way too. Right. Either. Why don't you want me just to take him?
Okay. Here, let me just hand you these.
Okay.
I don't think they.
So Justin's just handing me some of the ones that came in. And then once he's gone, I'll be able to start again. Jenna, would it be okay if I cover these ones that I think you sent over early? And then Jenna, maybe you go through some of the ones that came through while I was talking.
Just sure, that'd be fine.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, thanks for that. Sorry about that. So I'm just going to look at these now and then talk to them. So what's the main challenge you foresee in leading Boise this year? Okay, that's a great question. I mean, I really see the continued growth that we're experiencing that we touched upon as being the crux of the challenge. But then there are pieces of that. It's how do we continue to increase the number of homes that are affordable at Boise budgets that to respond to that growth. We are going to see, as part of that growth, you know, the pressure on transportation, and so need to advocate for additional federal funding to invest in transit systems here, as well as with the state. I feel like I talked on much of it, but do believe that for the foreseeable future, it'll be the growth that we're experiencing that creates so many opportunities. And so it's important also to remind ourselves to find opportunities in that growth, but that we'll need to respond with new ideas as proactively as possible in partnership, frankly, with the state, with businesses and others, because we can't do it alone, to make sure that we're protecting what we love about this community, creating space for those that call it home, but making sure that there's opportunities for folks to be able to afford to live here and find the jobs that make it possible to build lives here. Look at the next one. Sure. So another question is, it says a wonderful part of Boise's infrastructure is our foothills open space and trails. Can you speak to the challenges of maintaining the quality of our open space and opportunities for expansion? Yes. No, it is. Now when I think back to Mayor Coles and the committee that recommended to him that we set aside open space for future generations. And frankly, that campaign, when we talked about what we believe the first levy could do in terms of making it possible to set aside open space, I'm really struck by the vision that committee had and that the mayor had, because they were right. And the city would continue to grow, and we had an opportunity to do it differently than others had. And I remember even the Statesman publishing these pictures of Reno with homes all over the hills. And so taking that step, passing that levy, was important, because that first levy was able to set aside a lot of open space, acquire easements, you know, there's a whole generation of folks now that have been using these trails and don't know that that's where it came from. And then the city of Boise said, and residents in the city of Boise, I mean, said, let's do it again, and did it in 2015. And we are currently looking at and recognizing with the pressures of growth, there is, you know, an opportunity that's narrowing to do some of the final acquisitions with that, with funds from that final levy, but also recognize that clean water projects are important, and that was part of it. And as I reference, there's potential for pathways and linear access points or parks throughout this whole city that levies could be used for. So, you know, I start with the open space piece because that was the premise of the question. There's the management of that open space too, because we've seen now that during the pandemic, of those, the stay home time usage increased threefold, but it hasn't gone down. And so that requires more active management on the part of the city and on the volunteer committee that reviews management strategies as well for the city, the Foothills Committee. So there's management piece. It's a priority of mine that we and the city council has agreed that a policy will be that every kid has access to a park, a 10-minute walk to a park. And that's going to be, it's a long-term goal because we can't do it overnight. But what that means is that we're looking at, as our city grows and we re-envision what open space and parks access looks like so that kids can walk from home to a park safely and easily and relatively quickly, we're going to be looking for opportunities to find some more of those pocket parks, if you will, so that people can get to the to outdoor space. But also, again, I see the canals as a big part of that. Because they wind through so many different neighborhoods and touch so many people. So as our city grows up, we're going to be growing together, and we are growing up, especially downtown. The importance and priority of acquiring spaces for our people to go to rest, recreate, see other folks, just get some quiet outdoor time is a priority for us as something that we have to do to maintain the quality of life and level of service that we've all come to expect. The last thing we want to see is disinvestment in those areas as we continue to grow. Oh, I did want to say too, touched on, I referenced it, but I wanted to say, I meant to say while I was talking, thank you to Boise for supporting the clean water bond in the fall. We have, you know, need to address, and I bring this up because of the clean water components of the Foothills Levy, but we know that we have to address aging infrastructure. That Lander Street plant was built in, with a bond in the 50s, and then federal grants built the other one, the West Boise system, in the, I want to say 80s, might have been early 90s. So we need to address aging infrastructure, but also it's a clean water climate play in terms of making sure that we have opportunities and plans in place if the opportunity arises to have water renewal so that we can provide and have a source for clean water for manufacturing or for people down the way. But just as Boiseans valued open space, Boiseans value clean water. And the vote in the fall at over 80% sent a very strong message of the values that our community has, and made it possible for us to then advocate for a special financing mechanism through the federal government, the first time we've had it here in Idaho, that will give us access to pretty much, it's like a line of credit almost, if you will, in my own regular people language, that gives us access to credit for some of these projects at a lower interest rate than we could even get in low interest municipal finance bonds. So we'll be saving millions of dollars for our residents because of this program, because of the value that the city placed on clean water. So thank you very much. So the next question is related to the Boise State University study that just came out that found that 78.3% of people feel the Treasure Valley is growing too fast. The question is, do I agree? I mean, the reality is whether we agree or not, we're growing. And so just as the topic of this conversation that you all are having is how we make investments in infrastructure as we grow. It's incredibly important that this region recognize and leaders recognize that we need to make the investments. We're playing catch up in so many ways from an infrastructure perspective for the growth that's occurred in the last decade or two. Playing catch up And we've got to get ahead. And that's why leaders throughout this region are looking seriously at transportation systems. And there's a question, I think one of the next ones is about responsibility, paying for schools, roads, police, et cetera. We've made a commitment to ensure that our impact fees are truly covering the costs of new police, new fire, new parks, because that's what we collect impact fees for. And regional leaders are asking that schools be included in the equation. And especially in communities outside of Boise, think CUNA, Star, Middleton, others that are just growing so rapidly. They also need to build schools because we're growing closer together and we have existing schools and Boise and Strabane's are helping renovate those. But there are so many communities in this region that just need to build new schools. And so they would like the legislature to allow them to collect impact fees for schools as well, which they can't do right now. And then the next one, do you feel Boise is at risk of losing the qualities that have made it a special place? Friendly, drivable, safe, affordable, et cetera. How do you lead to preserve these qualities? It's that paradox, if you will, that is at the crux of our desire to ensure that Boise remains a city for everyone. And talked a little bit about the reading that I did, the history of our community as we've gone through these ebbs and flows of growth, and the fear at every time that residents who love this place had that this place would change. They've gone through that moment of growth, they've come together, they've addressed hard challenges. We've settled for a little while and then we start to grow and we go through it again. That is what is happening to us right now with a whole bunch more pressure than people have experienced before. But I believe deeply that we remain the community that we are with the growth by always being intentional and recognizing who we are. And that is that we are a group of people committed to this place, committed importantly to each other, that are passionate about this community that we call home, that are going to do everything we can to manage the growth, make the investments that we must to ensure that we protect what we love about this place. And I'm optimistic that we've done it before and we'll be able to do it again. And with that, Jenna, that was the list. So if you've got stuff coming through, happy to take more until I'm not sure when this ends. So just tell me when I need to stop, if that's okay.
Okay. Or you're covering a lot of things. Let's see, you covered quite a few that are on here. You talked about working with other mayors in the region. So I don't know if you have any more to say about that.
I'll just say on that, it's been a joy to get to know the other leaders. I don't think that's me. To get to know the other leaders in the region. And, you know, I touched on it just briefly, but just yesterday, the commanding officer of the Mountain Home Air Force Base came to visit. Yes, and I want to highlight this because Mayor Sykes in Mountain Home had really wanted to connect more with this region. And I saw a great opportunity there because they have quite a few of their servicemen and women that live in the Treasure Valley, and saw a great opportunity to forge deeper connections with the base in particular, but the city as well. And so now when I think about it, I really do think of it, as I mentioned, from Mountain Home to Caldwell and the smaller communities around, but as those are the two anchors or bookends in this region. And with the mayor of Mountain Home and the Air Force Base, we're actually talking about transportation between our city and theirs and what studies we might need to do. They are interested in being supportive of our efforts to bring rail back to the Treasure Valley and want to be and participate in that. They're facing affordable housing challenges and want to brainstorm as many solutions together as possible, both for our city, because they have so many folks that want to live here, but also for theirs. And so that's been a great burgeoning partnership that I really, really enjoy. And then I'll just mention the other bookend, Caldwell has a new mayor. But before Mayor Nankolas retired, I got out to, and before he was sure if he would run again or not, I spent an afternoon with the mayor in Caldwell, because I thought it was incredibly important to get out there. And that's an amazing, amazing city. He's done incredible stuff in Caldwell. And it's such a great connection again between our two cities. And it was interesting because there we sat down for lunch and the woman who was working in the restaurant was like, "I recognize you." And I said, "Me? You mean him?" And she's like, "No, you're the mayor." I'm like, no, he's the mayor. And she lived in Boise. And so she lived in Boise and was working in Caldwell. And so people in Caldwell live in Caldwell and work in Boise. So there's that natural connection and interest in seeing, and they too are facing affordable housing challenges. So seeing how we can work as a complete region to address these challenges, because it can't be one city alone doing this because we all move back and forth so much.
That's so great to hear. Another question came through was, there's been a recent rise in extremism and hate speech here in Boise. How do you address this issue to protect the human rights of all Boiseans?
Yeah, excuse me. There has been, and it's been really concerning. And last week we sat down with the two rabbis, both of Chabad and Cabby, and then members of the Jewish community to have a discussion with our police department, with my leadership team about steps that we should take moving forward, because it is, of course, important that we denounce as it happens, but most important is that we take further action as a community to educate and prevent. And I wanted to hear from them their concerns, but also their suggestions, and we committed to convene others to have a conversation around this very topic. But one of the things that I said that day that I want to say now is there have been multiple instances. And every time they've taken place, they're an affront first to those in our Jewish community because of the long, long history of anti-Semitic actions by those in power, by communities, et cetera. And while I'm not Jewish, they hit me, but I can only partially understand how much that hits a person, because these attacks have been based on someone's faith, and faith you can't walk away from. And it's either a practicing faith or the kind of the foundation of the cultural experience you've had as you've grown up. And in my own experience as mayor, we've had protesters, we've had threats, we've gone through a lot. But what I said to them was, I can walk away. And just like these anti-Semitic events, the actions taken against Diana, against me, against others are designed to terrify, but we can walk away. And a member of the Jewish community can't walk away from that faith. These actions are designed to terrify them. And they do. And it's incredibly important that we've acknowledged the history in our own community and state of this. We recognize there's a rise in extremism that we're witnessing across this country, but happening here too. And that as a community, we have those conversations and come up with the action steps necessary to combat it. And also to create a forum in which we can come together when and if it happens again. And that was the commitment that I made to them, was that we would convene folks to determine how best to prevent, importantly, but then to more strongly react in the future if it happens again.
Thank you. I know that concerns us all. There's a question that came up in the Q&A, kind of long, I'll read it. What's your staff doing to minimize property taxes within city limits? We are retired, live in the North End, saw our property tax bill increase $2,000 for this year without our having made any home improvements. For those living on fixed incomes, continued increases like this will likely force some seniors away from their home.
Yeah. Thank you for that question. And I'm sorry. I think that the property tax bills this year for everybody were shocking, my family included. We're doing a couple different things on this. I want to first explain, for us as a city, we're constrained in how much revenue how we can increase our budget. So every year we're able to grow our budget by 3% plus the impact of new growth in the city. And that changed with the legislature. They said you can't take all the growth. So unfortunately, with that has longer term impacts on those that are already living here. But you probably noticed in looking at your property tax bill that your assessment went way up. Because the homeowner's exemption has been capped, that's moved a lot. It's shifted a lot of the property tax burden to residential folks. And while that's happened, we've also seen assessments go way up. So there are a couple of different things as a city we're looking at. The first year I was in office, we looked at and didn't take the additional revenue we were allowed to take. We took growth because we don't want existing residents paying for growth, but we kept our budget flat. We didn't increase it by 3%. This last time around we did. And we did it because of the kind of compounding impact of the legislation that came through at the end of the legislature. It didn't make sense fiscally to not take it because of the compounding impact if we don't want to see disinvestment in our community as we continue to grow. We are asking and have been working very closely with cities throughout this region and the state around alternative solutions that'll really get to the crux of the issue, which is for you in particular, you're retired, living on a fixed income, and your property tax bill is rising. And we want to see meaningful relief in the form of growing and indexing the homeowner's exemption. We've begun conversations about the impacts of lack of uniformity in assessments, and especially as you relate it to the assessments when you look at how commercial was assessed in this last year. It didn't grow the way our houses grew. So we're looking for solutions and working with Association of Iowa Cities and cities in particular on that. There are a couple bills at the legislature that are being floated right now that'll address one particular will address the circuit breaker for cities, which I'm very excited about because we need to be able to expand circuit breaker relief. And then one thing I do want to point out, while this doesn't get to the dollars and cents of it, it's a commitment that we made to work better and more closely with other agencies in the state. All of last year during the session, when cities were proposing solutions, when the legislature was proposing ideas, we made our staff available to cities around the state to help them see the impact of the bills being floated, because we believe that other cities are better spokespeople than us. And we also believe that other cities should know just as well as we do the impacts of these bills on their bottom line and on their end, whether or not they'd have the impacts being sought for their residents. And so continue to do that as we work together to propose solutions that haven't necessarily gotten hearings, but support the ones that really will get at the crux of the issue.
Great, thank you. One more, how are you going to keep Boise from becoming tenth city like Portland and Seattle, San Francisco? What is the city's responsibility to the homeless as well as to all the rest of its citizens to avoid the situation of these other cities?
Yeah, and we've seen, it's not just Portland and Seattle, around the country, growing concern and growing impact of the economy, the pressures that we're experiencing on families and those experiencing homelessness. We're going to stay true to what we've said we'd stay true to, and that has prevented this issue from arising. We know that we have an opportunity to bring our solutions to scale because it's not too late here. And we are doing that. So I addressed housing. You know, there's a lot of research out there that shows as housing prices increase and availability of rentals decrease, you get to this point where it's no longer tenable and people become unhoused. So we have the programs and partnerships to keep people housed because we got to keep them in homes. We're addressing affordability as quickly as we can. We're making up for years of no new units in our community that were affordable to Boiseans at working Boisean budgets. We're doing that. And then we are staying committed to and implementing permanent supportive housing solutions, because getting people housed, providing the services needed to keep those who are chronically homeless housed is incredibly important. We'll continue as a city to make those investments rather than walking away from it.
Well, Mayor, I think we've gone through all the questions that have been submitted. We're a little early, but I'm sure you have other things to do. So I just want to thank you so much for taking the time, and your staff too, who have helped get this all together. And we're a whole bunch of volunteers, and we would love to help out in the city in any way that we can. And I know there's a website that is put up there in the chat. Do you have something more?
Oh yeah, I can't see I've got a camera in front of me, so I don't see much of the screen. The mentioning the volunteer piece, thank you for saying that, because that was something that Justin had mentioned to me and then I forgot to mention it. We need you, we really do. I am constantly, it's so interesting. I think we have 13 volunteer commissions at the city of Boise, and constantly, it seems there's an opening on one of them. So always seeking people committed to this community that want to contribute in a way that impacts our city through city government. These committees range from public works, which I was saying to Boise Young Professionals, might sound really drab and dull, but I think it's one of the most interesting places to be, because it's where you get to work on clean water of the future, transition to clean energy, climate solutions, and service delivery. It really is where so many of the today's challenges that become opportunities are centered. We have the Parks Commission, the Foothills Open Space Commission that I referenced, the Historic Preservation Commission, Planning and Zoning. I actually have one that I'll flag too, and that's the Urban Renewal District, the Capital City Development Corporation, CCDC. Has and will have several openings this year. And so I'm looking for folks with financial backgrounds, backgrounds in boards, and many of you here do, other professional backgrounds that would be interested in that committee, as well as all the others too. So please do check out the website. And you can also, if there's something, an interest that you have, a specific interest, you have any questions, the easiest way for me to send folks to us is to say, email Mayor McLean, and my name is spelled with only one C. It's like McLean, Virginia, McLean, Mayor McLean at cityofboise.org. That gets routed to Ari, our constituent services manager, and they'll be able to either share with me or get to you information on what opportunities might align with your interests.
Perfect. I'm glad we got to that part.
Yeah, thank you. I want to say thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. You know, I was thinking, I'm staring into, it's like a regular camera on a tripod, but it's going to be so weird when we can all do what I really want to do, which is see a whole bunch of faces, because I've gotten so used to just looking at the little pinhole. But really do appreciate this time to chat, to see some of the comments if they pop up high enough. But most truly do look forward to being able to see everyone face to face at some time in the future, and look forward to spring, because I'm confident we'll be able to do more then. But thank you so much for everything you do as an organization, as I said, as individuals as well, but for creating this opportunity for me to come chat. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess we're done.
Thanks.